Hello everyone, I'm Zola Zingit. Welcome to COVID Stuck Abroad, the podcast where I get to chat with South Africans who are living abroad in 2020, when COVID-19 changed the world as we know it. This podcast aims to tell the personal accounts of guests featured and does not claim to offer verified facts. To get verified information about COVID-19 and related information, please refer to the official World Health Organization website, as well as the official South African government website. Please see the show notes for links. It must also be stated that COVID Stuck Abroad will not tolerate xenophobic sentiments. Listeners should recognize that the personal experiences of one individual cannot be viewed as a representation of an entire nation, ethnicity, or culture. Okay, now let's get to today's episode. Hello everyone. My guest today is Marissa Naidu. Marissa moved to Sichuan, China in January 2019 to work as an ESL teacher at an after-school language institution. She stayed there for 2 years, deciding to come back to South Africa in January 2021. She's now studying for her postgraduate diploma in education at Cornerstone Institute. Hi, Marissa.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm just excited that we finally get to do our recording. We've tried this so many times.
I'm excited too. Yes. I'm glad that it's working out.
How are you doing? Like, how's your day been?
Tired, but good. Yeah.
What's Durban like today? You're in Durban, right?
Yeah. Sunny. It's a Durban winter, you know? And then, like, it's so cold. I'm like, not really.
Yeah. But like, no, like even the side things are warming up a bit more as we end July, which is a good thing. We finally in Gauteng are over the third wave peak. So I'm hoping things will just get better overall. Yeah.
Yeah,
as well. So we're going to have a very long conversation today. So I just want to get into it very quickly because I have so many questions for you about your journey. You know how fascinated I am by like everything you lived through in the past 2 years. So just to start off.
Yeah, I think as I went through it, I'm like not like, I don't think it's fascinating just because I went through it. So I'm like, oh, that happened. But I guess sort of now, like looking back on it, I'm like, oh, okay, that it makes sense why Zola was so fascinated with it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let me just say it now that you and Tina, you know, Tina Xu, who was my first guest, the two of you sort of inspired this podcast because I was hearing your stories in real time and I was just thinking, what is going on? And I just wondered, you know, what everyone else, other South Africans were also experiencing during this crazy time that we've all lived through. So yeah, it's actually amazing that you're like, you know, my final guest for this first season of COVID Stuck Abroad.
Oh, I'm so excited that I get to do it because I was like, oh, I'm never going to get to do this and I'm not going to be a part of it, but.
I know. I was also worried about that because I was like, no, I really want you to be a part of it, you know, so I'm really glad this is happening. So just to, you know, go to the very beginning of you being this like international nomad, this person who, you know, is constantly moving around. My first question to you is, you know, like, I know you've lived in the US and you've also lived in South Korea, in Taiwan, and then, you know, the latest was China. How were you able to like live in all those different countries? Why did you even want to do that? And yeah, like just how have you been able to like move around? Why did you make that decision?
I mean, I've always been interested in travel and just like exploring things on my own sort of, and kind of had that like same mindset that I guess a lot of people have when they finish university too, and just like, oh, I want to kind of explore, and you don't really know who you are at that point, and you kind of just, I didn't know what exactly I wanted to do. And for me, it was like, it's like, there's so many opportunities to learn, I think, and like meeting new people, but I guess I didn't know what I was getting into either. It was like, oh, I made this decision in my mind and kind of just jumped into it. I mean, going to the US, it was like while I was in university, and it was very cushioned, I guess. Like, I was, everything was planned. I kind of knew what I was getting into, and it is a Western country, so it wasn't like so much of a like, oh, I need to adapt to things. And I was staying on campus, so it wasn't too bad. But Korea was like the first time where it was like, oh, I'm on my own. I'm, you know, it's a completely different country. So that was a big change for me.
And with Korea, that was like your first time teaching, right? Like going to be an ESL teacher.
Yeah, and that was always crazy for me too, because I'm not like the most, you know, getting in front of people and kind of having a loud voice. So I never imagined myself as a teacher.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a very different experience. And but now it's been like one of like, especially going to so many countries now and teaching in those countries and knowing all of my students, it's so, now it's like, it's really meaningful, like once I like look back on it.
I mean, essentially are choosing it now even as a career, like with your studies.
Yeah. And I never thought I would, but I really see how like the impact you can make now and just the relationship with the students as well.
So why specifically did you go to China in 2019? You know, so it's like I mentioned the other countries that you lived in. So why was China next on your radar?
Well, at that time, like I was back in South Africa. I was like, I wonder which country I'm going to go to next. So, you know, we've had these conversations so many times. What am I going to do next? Where am I going to go? And then I was speaking to my cousin, and my cousin just finished her degree at the time, like a few months ago, and she kind of seemed like she wanted to leave as well and see something different. And it was mostly her, like she really wanted to see China, and I'm pretty open, I guess, and I was like, okay, let's do it, let's try. And I think we got a good opportunity, and the job that we were offered was really good, and we could stay in the same city and at the same school, actually. So it all kind of worked out. It all fell into place.
And what was that first year like? Like, did you choose Sucheon yourselves? Like, how did you end up in Sucheon even?
No. I think it was more like looking for the job and having like all of the right things in the job and like the city. And I didn't want like my cousin to be alone as well. So it was more those things and not so much like focusing on which city we were going to be in.
Okay.
Yeah. So we didn't really choose the city.
But what was it like?
But the first year
how big is it? Like what is Sucheon like? And you know, what was that first year like?
I mean, it's big because China is so big, but it's a small city for China. But it has a few million. it's small for China, but it's big. It was different. Like, it's different from any other place that I've been to. And even though I've been to, like, Asian countries before where English isn't the first language, I've never been to a place like this where it's like, you hardly hear any English. Like, it's confused. Like, you're completely thrown into Chinese, like, everything. It was difficult to get used to as well. And I wanted to kind of, like, with my cousin, I wanted to make sure that she was having a good experience. And it was also cold when we got there. It was snowing. But it turned into a good experience because, mostly because of our job. We had a really good job, really good coworkers. We're surrounded by good people.
Yeah. And then do you perhaps remember the first time you sort of heard about a virus? Or by the time you were aware, I guess I'm trying to figure out, like, when were you aware about, like, this virus that was sort of spreading? And what did you think it was?
Yeah, like, I know that people say they've heard about it like in November, December, but
of 2019,
there wasn't really, 2019, there wasn't really a lot of talk about it. And I think if it was like talked about a lot and we had like detailed information about it, then no one would have been like going out of the country for Chinese New Year. And that's how, like, the whole thing, I mean, it spread so fast because of Chinese New Year.
Yeah.
So we obviously didn't have, like, a lot of information about it. And we went, like, towards the end of January to, like, out of China. So even at that point, it wasn't, like, so serious. It was only while we were in Cambodia that I was, like, all over the news and things got really serious. And I think it got more serious when they said, okay, it's out of China now, it's spreading, you know, a lot of people have it.
I think with you specifically, I don't know if I'm, like, bringing up, like, our personal conversations or what, but with you specifically, I remember, I can't remember the date, but I just remember you being, I think you were sick or you had a cold or something, I can't remember. And then you were planning to leave.
While I was in China.
Yeah. And then you were planning to leave for Cambodia. And I remember asking you, I'm like, aren't you worried you might be sick about with this new thing that's apparently spreading in China? And like, you are not worried at all. And like, you were still going to Cambodia. And I was like, should you be like, aren't you really sick? Are you going to be fine traveling? Like, were you just not worried at all? Or like, I don't know. I just remember being more worried than you.
Yeah, and that's what I think too, is that people back home, people in South Africa were telling me, oh yeah, you heard about the new virus and it's happening, whatever. And people, I mean, I guess the people that I was surrounded by or people in my city, they were kind of downplaying it. And they're like, oh, it's fine. It's just a virus. It'll be okay. Like, it didn't seem like they were making it like a huge issue. So I thought, oh, it's people back home kind of like exaggerating. Because if I'm in China and the people in China are telling me that it's fine and you can go on holiday, I'm thinking, oh, it's not that serious if I can go on holiday.
Yeah.
And at that point, we're not wearing masks or anything. We only started wearing masks in Cambodia.
Ah, so in Cambodia, you already did start wearing masks.
Yeah.
And this was in, you went to Cambodia for the Chinese New Year, right?
Yeah.
How long were you supposed to be there for?
About a week and a half.
And then how long did you actually end up staying?
I stayed the whole time. Like, it was just like the time that I was supposed to go back to China, I came back to South Africa.
Ah, so you did just stay just like that 1 week and a half. Okay, so let's go back to that time. Like, what's going on? Yeah. You're in Cambodia. Why do you guys start wearing masks? Like, what's happening? Like, what is the communication that you're getting from your colleagues or from your school?
Well, the thing is, even when we got to Cambodia, I was still sick. And I thought I was fine. Like, I got the flu while I was in China. And I was on an IV drip. But I still thought I could be okay. And I...
Oh, my goodness, Marissa.
I felt okay. Then we went to Cambodia. We were in Phnom Penh. And I think I fainted on the street. Yeah, I fainted on the street.
What? I don't know this.
Oh, I thought I told you that. No. Well, I fainted while I was in China, too. Like, I told you that, right? While I was waiting to get the drip.
No, I don't. Oh, okay, maybe I forgot. I don't know. What? My goodness, Marissa.
Oh.
Okay, so you fainted in China and then you decided to still go to Cambodia.
You know how you have like this one window where you feel like, oh, I'm okay now, but then you realize that it's just a window and it's like you didn't actually recover.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
I don't know if you know how you just have a time where you feel like you're okay, but yeah. Okay, so yeah, then I ended up fainting in Cambodia again and I got like a bit sick and I was really out of it. So for the first, I'd say like 4 or 5 days over there, I guess everything was going on, but my cousin, well, Nadine, she was taking care of me the whole time. We didn't have a TV in the hotel room. We weren't so aware of everything that was going on because we were so occupied at the time. Yeah, and it was only when we flew from Phnom Penh to Siem Reap, and it was there that we kind of noticed, so I got a bit better, basically, and then it was there that we noticed, oh, everyone's wearing masks all of a sudden, and they're taking our temperature everywhere, and I'm like, huh, what's going on? And then kind of like watched the news a bit more, paid more attention, like, okay, it's getting a bit serious, and it was getting serious there in Cambodia. And people were calling me too. And they're like, are you okay? Where are you? I'm like, oh, I think I was so out of it because I was sick. And with everything going on, I was like, it like just like landed on me. So if it wasn't like this growing thing where I'm like, oh, it's getting serious now. It's just kind of, yeah.
Okay, so then why did you decide to come to South Africa then, like from Cambodia? Like, why didn't you go back to China?
Yeah, I mean, we saw how bad things were getting. Our manager was in Vietnam at the time, and he was texting our boss, and we were in a group chat, and like, what's going to happen? It seems to be getting serious. Should we go back to China? And our boss was like, no. It's getting pretty serious here. We don't think you should come back. And Nadine and I were kind of like, okay, we think we need to go home. And our boss agreed with that as well. And at the time, South Africa didn't have any cases. And we were in the mindset that, like, this virus was kind of like, would stay in Asia. So, like, okay, we'd be safe in South Africa. We'll wait until things get better. And you know, at that point you're thinking, oh, it'll be a few weeks and then everything will be back to normal and it'll be okay and we go back. That was how it was. And I was like, no, this is never in my mind that I think, oh, this is gonna go on for like over a year.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what happened.
Okay, so when you come back to South Africa, you know, what is your family saying? How long did you expect to stay here? And, you know, like, what were your plans? Like, did you think you'd go back, like, quickly? Or, yeah, it's like, what were you thinking at that point?
Yeah, when we got back, I thought it might take, like, I thought we would be here, like, for about a month. And we were here for about a month.
When did you land?
My family, like, they went to on the 1st of February.
Oh, okay. So it's like for the entire month of February, you were in South Africa?
Yeah.
Okay.
We left early March.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I got back, I mean, family, yeah, they were concerned, but I don't think, at least my family and people that I was surrounded by, they weren't too concerned that the virus was going to come here or anything like that.
Yeah. So what were you doing? Like, so the entire time that you were in South Africa, you were not working. Like, your schools were closed. So you just sort of were on holiday this side.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was towards the end of that month, I think, that they were like, okay, we're going to start online classes and stuff like that. Actually, they started online classes quite early, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's China. They tried to, like, you know, everything was like, okay, we need to do something now.
Yeah. And so it's like, why then, if they were doing online classes then, it's like, why couldn't you stay this side longer? You know, it's like, because it seems really early for you to have gone back.
Because of the time difference, you know, I'd have to be up, like, early morning.
And they kind
of wanted to have, like, training sessions and, like, internet connectivity as well. Like, that's a big issue.
Yeah.
Like, it just wouldn't have been up to the level that they would need.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm not going to lie. It's one of the things I miss the most of our career. Just the internet speed, the internet connection at, like, reasonable prices. But, okay. So, it's like, when you're leaving to go back to China in early March, like, to me, that seems crazy because I feel like that's... That seems to be the time when this virus was spreading around the world. So were you not afraid to go back?
Yeah, I was really afraid. But our boss was kind of like, you need to come back now. And they were saying that their city, our city, was getting better with the cases and things would be okay. Yeah. And at that time, yeah, China was, the cases were going down quite fast. Like, it surged for a few weeks and then it lowered. So they're like, okay, it's getting better, so you can come back. And yeah, we kind of just took that chance. But going back, it was one of the craziest experiences too. It was like a whole new world. And I guess like the world we live in now, but at that time it was just, it was very different, to be honest.
Why? What do you mean? Like, what was going on?
Like, okay, so when we went to Shenzhen, I think, so we went from Johannesburg to Shenzhen.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that flight, okay, it wasn't too bad. But in Shenzhen, like, just seeing the entire airport with masks and everyone's kind of like, it was this like knowing, like everyone's like, you know, looking at each other like, we know this virus is going on, like anyone could have it.
Mm.
It was a very different feeling, a very different atmosphere. You know, we were spraying the seats we were sitting on. We were like, everyone was like on edge. You could see it. You'd feel the tension kind of.
Yeah.
At the airport. Yeah.
And that, what was it like then to be back? So what happened when you landed back in like Suzhen? You know, just like, what was the experience of then traveling back? Did you see anything different about the city, or?
I mean, we got so many instructions as well. Like when we were going back to China, we were like, we were told, okay, you need to record everything. Like you need to record like which train you're taking, the flight, your flight number, the seat you're going to be sitting on, everything. You need to keep every receipt.
Jeez.
You need to keep everything so that they can track, and if you happen to get the virus, they'll be able to track from where you got it from and who else you've been in contact with, so they can inform that flight, they can inform that bus or anything like that. So we took note of everything, kept everything. When we got to our apartment complex, we had to stand there. Our bags were taken from us, sanitized. People were in hazmat suits. We were taken to our apartment. Our boss had like stocked up our apartment with food and everything.
Oh, that's so nice.
Because, you know, we had to quarantine. Yeah, that was really nice. We had to quarantine for 2 weeks. It was different to when we got back. It was just, I mean, to see everything, everything was closed, everything. And to see that place like that, when you're so used to seeing people everywhere, you're so used to seeing the streets busy, it was different. It was very different. The whole experience from going from South Africa back to China was just so crazy. So it was so different, so eerie almost. Yeah, so... And then we had to get a COVID test. Next was the next day or 2 days later. I think I told you the story about the bicycle.
Well, I actually can't remember it. What happened?
Well, they told us that we'd have to go to the hospital for a COVID test. But they told us that we travel mostly by like using public transport or taking a taxi or something in that city. So... they told us, well, you can't use any public transport. Well, they didn't actually tell us. It was only when we went down, when they told us to come down from our apartment, that we found out what we were supposed to do, of course. because we came down and we see these people there with bicycles. And yeah, that's when they're like, you can't use public transport to get to the hospital because we don't want you in contact with anyone. And then they gave us gloves and like a whole plastic type suit thing, and the bicycle was also covered, the handles were covered, and like, okay, now you have to cycle to the hospital 17 kilometers away.
Oh my god. Yeah, I think I remember this. Yeah.
And
I even asked you, because I'm like, you're not even a big cyclist,
you know I mean, yeah, I can barely cycle properly. So, to be on the road and going that far, no. I let them look at me try to do it so they could actually see that I'm not a good cyclist. I think they like struggle to believe it as well, because everyone can cycle well. Then if you can't, it's like, no, you're lying.
And so wait, they allowed you guys to then like call a cab, right?
No, they're like, no, you still can't use any public transport. And they're like, okay, go back to the apartment. And so we went back, and then the next day. Yeah, the next day, they said they would send people from the hospital to come to our apartment to take the test.
My goodness. Oh, my. That is so strict. It's like, you know, it does seem like China is really strict, just even with like contract tracing, but ensuring like knowing where everyone is going, like everyone's movements.
Yeah. And I mean, there's cameras everywhere. I haven't been to a place in China where I haven't seen a camera. There's cameras everywhere. So if you had to like break your quarantine and go out of your apartment, they would definitely know about it. It's not like you can just go.
Man, I mean, that really is surveillance culture. So then what was the rest of 2020 like? So it's like you're back in China. When did you guys get back to teaching full-time? And
So it wasn't too long. Like, I think we went back to the classroom. So we got back to China early March. We were back in the classroom around April. Cases were fine. Like, it wasn't too bad. Like, we got back, and then I think we got back in April. By May, we stopped wearing masks.
What?
And by May, everything was, by May, everything was fine. There were no cases in that city. It went to zero. And I think by May, there were just like 12 cases in China or something. It was really low numbers after that.
Yeah.
In terms of China, it was like, oh, it's gone.
Did you feel like the, like you got to experience the pandemic much, like while that side? Because I remember us speaking and it seemed like you hardly ever experienced a lockdown, which I thought was so odd because you left South Africa before we were under lockdown. And then you, when you were in China, it's like you didn't seem to be living under any sort of lockdown.
Yeah, that was the thing, because we left South Africa on the 1st. Of March?
Yeah.
Oh, no. The first case was announced on the 1st, and we left on the 6th.
Yeah, I remember that.
So, yeah, we just missed that. And by the time we got to China, things were okay as well, so we were in the clear. And it was just the 2 weeks of quarantine that we did, and after that, yeah, we didn't really experience a lockdown where... Because at that time, like a month before, they only had... You could go out of your house 1 hour a week to get groceries or something. And I think it was one person per household had a card. So you could leave with that card once a week. But we didn't experience any of those things because it was fine by that time.
So it's like you literally were just like missing all the lockdowns. Like you just like found a way to miss the lockdowns.
Yeah.
It's like that's a crazy experience even in and of itself. Because so many people have experienced, you know, like hard lockdowns during that time. And then here you are living in China at some point, but you're like, I didn't experience that.
I think that's why it's so hard for me now to like being back, even though like it's just like, oh, I have to wear a mask all the time. I have to be extra careful. And yeah, this is the only time that I've kind of experienced it.
So why did you even decide to come back to South Africa?
I mean, as you know, I have a baby now.
Yay.
So, I was pregnant, and that was one of the big reasons to come back. To have my baby here in South Africa. That was one of the biggest reasons.
And it's like, were you not worried about traveling while pregnant, especially during, you know, like this time, the like this crazy time?
Yeah, I was very worried. I knew in my mind, like, I was like, this is a risk. Is it a risk that you're going to be willing to take? And at the end of the day, I did decide that I wanted to do it.
Yeah. So when did you come back? Like, when did your contract end, and when did you guys come back to South Africa?
Yeah, I didn't really finish the whole contract because the contract was supposed to end, I think in March, at the end of March or something.
Oh, okay.
But I got back in February. So it wasn't too much, but I mean, obviously work understood because I was pregnant at the time, and then I had to come back like before 28 weeks. So, but coming back, it was a journey.
I mean, that's the other thing, right? Like, now let's paint that scenario for us of you trying to get back to South Africa. This is when, this is in, I mean, this is February, you said, right? Of this year.
Yeah, February. Yeah.
What was that like? Like, I know how crazy it got, but like, can you maybe like paint a picture for like our listeners of like what the logistics, the crazy logistics of you just trying to get back home?
Yeah, I had no idea, I think, like how difficult it was going to be.
Yeah.
Also, maybe because I was living in China at the time, I was going everywhere freely. I didn't think that it would be that difficult to come back, and I wasn't kind of realizing how it was in every other country that was experiencing so many cases of COVID. So I just didn't know that it would be as difficult as it was.
Yeah.
And I guess I kind of knew when, like, I was trying to book flights and they just kept getting canceled. Like, what's happening? Why do these flights keep getting canceled? Mm. And there's like no reason. They weren't giving any reasons for these cancellations. Or like, flights would change their dates. Yeah. There's a lot of that.
Yeah. Like, and this is like without informing you of much, right? Like,
Yeah. I spent so much time, like hours on end, just calling airlines, being like, why has it changed? Or, most of the time, the reason they gave was like, there's not enough people on this flight. So I guess people were canceling their flights, COVID things were happening, but they weren't really informing us of all of that. And instead of having three flights a week, they were having one.
But so what was it like? So when were you able finally to come back home?
I got back home on the 9th. Yeah, on the 9th of February.
Yeah.
And I think I was supposed to be back on the 1st or something. Yeah, I was supposed to be back on the 1st.
And that entire time, it's because, like, you couldn't get a flight.
I mean, okay, so I went from Suzhou, which is, like, an hour away from Suzhen, from Suzhou to Shenzhen. And from Shenzhen, it's about 40 minutes away from Hong Kong by car. While I was in Suzhen, contacted all of the places to ask, would we be able to cross the border from Shenzhen to Hong Kong? Is it okay? Everyone said it's fine. Like, we call the airport, the embassy, that like, it's open. So something changed within that time that we got from Suzhen to Shenzhen. Because while we were in Shenzhen, we had, how much time did I leave? Quite a few hours, 12 or 13 hours till the next flight. So I wanted to make sure we'd have enough time to cross the border, to get our bags, you know, to do all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then when we got to Shenzhen, from the airport, I was like, oh, this is going to be difficult, because they initially said that there is a shuttle going, but you'd have to check at the airport if the shuttle is still going. We checked if the shuttle is going. They're like, no, we stopped operating.
Oh, my goodness.
Asked a few people there, is the border open? Can we go to Hong Kong? Some people were like, yeah, maybe. You can try. Like, it was difficult. And we initially found a driver. Oh, well, we got from the airport, we had booked a hotel just to rest for an hour or two.
Mm.
Went to that hotel. We asked the hotel, can we go to Hong Kong? They're like, yeah, sure. You can just find a driver who has an international license that can take you through. Went back to the airport. We found a driver there. And on the way to Hong Kong, he's calling people at the border. People at the border are like, oh, these girls are South African. We're not letting South Africans through at the moment.
Oh.
Because things were bad in South Africa. COVID. I think we were like halfway to Hong Kong, and then he turned around like, no, sorry, can't take you to Hong Kong.
Because you're South African.
Even though, like we said, we've been living in China, haven't been to South Africa in the last 21 days.
Yeah. Oh my God. So what ended up happening? Like, how did you end up flying out of China?
So we went back. Oh, we got another hotel. booked in that hotel. And then we had the same driver take us to... It's literally trying every avenue, basically, to cross this border. Went to the ferry, and I thought, okay, maybe we can take the ferry across. He also said, maybe you can take the ferry across. So I went to the ferry terminal, and the people there are like, okay, fill in all of this paperwork. But once you get to Hong Kong... we're not responsible. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. You might have to be quarantined. They might send you back.
Oh my goodness.
Like, oh. Okay, so we were filling out paperwork. At that time, I was trying to change the flight as well, because obviously we're not going to make it for that flight. I changed that flight 4 times. changing the dates, and I still didn't end up taking the flight.
Oh, so, did you lose your money?
Yeah, I did lose my money.
I'm so sorry.
No, yeah, it's okay. It was just like no way that I could take that flight, just because we'd have to get to Hong Kong. Even if I had found a way to get to Hong Kong. Hong Kong was, because I called the Hong Kong, the South African embassy in Hong Kong, and they're like, no, no matter which way you get to Hong Kong, even if you had to take a flight into Hong Kong from China, you'd still have to quarantine, even if you're just going to be in the airport. So there was no way that I could...
fly out of Hong Kong.
Could take that flight, yeah.
So where did you end up flying out of?
Well, then I spent, over a week in Shenzhen trying to find flights. The problem with all of the flights was that most of them said self-transfer. And it was just a daily thing of, like, waking up. I mean, I felt like I was, working at an agency, because I just would wake up in the morning and call airlines and... find out about COVID restrictions and call embassies, find out if they were letting South Africans through.
Jeez.
It was a lot. Yeah, that was the daily thing. Yeah, a lot of the flights said self-transfer, which meant that you could fly there. There was just one direct flight to South Africa at that time.
Mm.
And it was with Air China. And it was 46. Thousand.
Oh my gosh.
Rand. So, yeah. And obviously, in my mind, at that point, I'm moving back to South Africa permanently. I've sent all my money back. Just kept a little bit of money just for traveling expenses to Hong Kong and things like that. But now that bit of money had to last that week while trying to find a flight to come back. And we like already lost the money for the previous flight. In my mind, I'm like, no, I'm not. I can't pay the 46,000. But then all the other flights kept saying self-transfer. So I was also not sure what to do about that. So that's why with the self-transfer thing, I was calling the airlines and calling the countries that we had to transfer in to find out, like, what that means to do. Because if I have to come out of baggage claim, and then that means that I'd need to go through passport control again. And if I need to go through passport control, they need to check that I've quarantined in that country. So I needed to have flights where I could just transfer instead of getting to baggage claim. That was the difficult part.
But eventually you got to do that.
Yeah, after like 7 days, I did find a flight, with Qatar, and then transferred in Malaysia and Doha.
Okay, so you had two transfers, but both of them you didn't have to do self-transfer.
Yeah, and honestly, I didn't know up until then because I called Malaysian Airlines and I called Qatar Airlines and on the phone with them, but like I asked, because it still said self-transfer on the flight, but I was looking at the flight numbers and the whole thing said, even though it was Malaysian Airlines, it was like part of Qatar. So I said Qatar. So I'm thinking, well, if it's with the same airline, they should let me transfer instead of having to come out of baggage and having to exit and re-enter.
So you were just taking a chance, essentially.
I was taking a chance. Yeah, completely. Like, I didn't know anything. Like, it was only when, like, I actually got through those two transfers, I'm like, oh, I'm going home. Because I didn't know at either one of those, maybe they would tell me in Malaysia, sorry, you would have to quarantine here. Or, yeah, I didn't know.
Oh, my God. And that hit me. Like, imagine, like, only after you get to Doha and you get, like, beyond passport control, yeah. And you're like, I get to go home.
Yeah. I didn't know. And that's the reason, like, I only booked that flight from Johannesburg to Durban once I was in Doha.
What was it like, though, then landing in Durban?
I couldn't believe that I was here. I couldn't believe that, like, wow, I made it. I don't think, like, even my family or friends, like, they're all like, are you going to make it? Will you just... Because the thing is, I was 28 weeks pregnant at the time. Like, if I had to go beyond that, I couldn't fly. I wouldn't be able to come. I'd have to stay in China. There were so many consequences of that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was...
I mean, I remember how relieved I was. I was like, where are you? What's happening?
Yeah.
Are you fine? And then it's like, you know,
yeah,
you were like, I'm here. And I was just like, oh my goodness, she made it.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
Okay. To round off our conversation, Marissa, how are you doing now? Like, how's everything? How's life? How's it being a new mom?
Oh, everything's good. I mean, it's hectic. Everything's good. I mean, I obviously wish things were better with COVID.
And yeah.
I wish I could take him out. I wish that, you know, life was a bit different. But hopefully, we will get better.
Yeah. Marissa, thank you so much. Thank you so much for making time for me. I know how busy you are. Like, it's not easy being, you know, a mom to an infant, as well as studying and then making time. I know you just had a test that you had to write.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful that you made time for me and this little podcast of mine.
I'm glad that I got to do it.
Yeah. You know, like I said, you were like one of my inspirations. So I'm really happy that we got to chat. And you are the last guest for this first season. So thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you.
Bye, Marissa.
Bye.
Thank you to everyone who's joined me on this podcast. There'll be one more episode coming out just to wrap up the entire season. I'll call it the first season. Thank you to everyone. And see you hopefully in the new season. But stay tuned, stay subscribed so that you can get next week's episode as well. They'll just be wrapping up the entire show. Thank you, everyone, and goodbye.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode. You can follow us on Instagram at @COVIDstuckabroad. On Facebook, you can search for CSA to like the page. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at covidstuckabroad@gmail.com. Please see show notes for the links. This episode of COVID Stuck Abroad was produced by Zola Zegut with funding from the National Arts Council's Presidential Employment Stimulus Program. The episodes were recorded at Solar Gold Studios.